This podcast is shareable. Shareable is the podcast fueled entirely by curiosity. Every episode features exciting guests who share valuable advice and insights, how-to guides, and practical takeaways. Join me as I explore the awe-inspiring stories about overcoming the odds, the secret formulas that gave each guest their unique superpower, and the moments that remind us of our shared humanity. Get ready to be excited, delighted, and possibly even astonished, because this podcast is shareable. Welcome back to Shareable. So, work can really suck sometimes, and that's not great. Wouldn't it be great if we learned how to make work not suck? We all want to have a work environment that we enjoy going to, but the problem is that no matter what we seem to try, it doesn't seem to be working, at least not on a macro scale. But today's guest is Jodi Thompson. She's an expert on adaptive change management to evolve work culture, and we're going to talk about how to make sure that your workplace doesn't suck anymore. Jodi, welcome to Shareable.
Oh, it's so great to be here, Jeff. I think this is a really hot topic right now. And as you mentioned, macro trends, we're in the middle of a disaster right now. And yeah, I'm excited to talk to you and your listeners about that.
Excellent. Yeah. And there's a lot of different terms that we, before we jumped on and started recording, we were talking about all the different terms that are being thrown around now, like the quiet quitting and the loud quitting and coffee badging. I hadn't even heard of that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know what? I'm going to tell you what that is.
Yeah. Tell me what that is.
If you're told you have to come into the office a certain number of days a week, what happens is organizations will watch your badge swipe as you go in. So what coffee badging is you badge in, you go have a cup of coffee, and then you leave and go do your work. And that's kind of what happens everywhere. You know that, Jeff, is that we put these barriers out there and people just find ways to get around them.
Yeah.
So we have to ask ourselves, why? Why the barrier?
Amazing. Okay. There's so much I want to get into with you. I have a whole list of topics that I'm ready to chat with you about. But before I get in that, I like to start out every episode with one really, really big question. Let's not start off with small talk. Let's get really big. What's the dent you wish to make in the world?
The tsunami that I wish to make in the world is setting up a situation for people globally where they can live their best lives. And right now, there's a lot of us are saying that, right? So we know that there's something going on. We're living in a contemporary society with a 20th century management mindset. So because we're stuck in that, we can't seem to find a way out. And we're going to talk about that today, Jeff. Like, what is the answer to that? What is the solution to getting out of this quicksand that we're in all the time? So I want to leave the world with getting that started, planting enough seeds, getting enough people like yourself involved, where we can make actual real adaptive change across the globe. That is what I want to do.
So I want to know two things about this. I want to know, one, where your interest in this originates from. And then I want to know a bit about, kind of just generally speaking, what your experience is in dealing with it. Because a lot of people that go into work with culture or leadership or change management and things like that, it's almost the same way that people get their superpowers. It's like there was a traumatic experience and you kind of come out and you're like, I can't allow it to be that way anymore. So I'm curious, like, where and how far back this originates in you that this is a problem. So why don't we just start there? Like, tell me about you and where your interest in this subject comes from.
So back in 2004 in Minneapolis, St. Paul, so in the Twin Cities of Minnesota, we had a huge monster blizzard. And the night before the day I had to go into work, everybody was watching the forecast, right? 6 inches of snow already down. We're going to get, you know, it ended up being 28 inches of snow. And the stress that I felt and every single person at this company I was working at felt to, are they going to let me stay at home and work today? Am I going to look like a slacker if I don't get out in the snow and go in? All of these things. Do I have enough PTO? And this is what's swirling through our head. And it's really sad because guess what? I went out in a Mini Cooper and risked my life to show that I could show up. And when I got there, all we were talking about was the storm and looking out the windows. And we were waiting for the CEO of a Fortune 100 company to say we could go home. And at that moment, it just flashed into my brain that the thing that's holding us back and holding everybody back, and we'll talk more about that, Jeff, is that we don't have autonomy to make the right decisions every day to do our best in both our personal and professional lives. It's controlled by somebody else. It's like us sitting there waiting for that. And finally, the email came out and we all got to leave at 1 o'clock. It took me 3 hours to go 1 mile. And I had to pee. And what are you going to do? You can't get off the freeway. You're in a gridlock. It took me about 5.5 hours to get home in a normally half hour drive. And that's why work sucks, because we don't have control over our time. And I knew at that point something had to be done. I was working at Best Buy and they were trying to figure out the work-life balance conundrum. Well, you're never going to solve it. As long as the organization has some control over your time, you're never going to achieve it, ever. Only we know what balance means for us. But when you put me in a situation that looks like it's, you know, equal amongst all the people, it actually undermines our ability to be engaged and excited and connected with family and connected with community and all those things that are human to us. So we have to stop, and I realized this very, very quickly. Everything we do is around the construct of Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Anything different than that needs a policy or permission, or, you know, let's just like change it a little bit and make everybody feel like it's big change. Let's let everybody work from home 2 days a week. Let them work from home, right? So that kind of control is what's holding all of us back. And there's social science to back it up.
I love it. I want to go down all of those roads, but first I have to 100% blow your mind here. So I'm a professional speaker and I've written a book. My book's called The Lovable Leader. And I give a presentation that is based in my book. And I give an example early on in my book, in my presentation, about one of the core pillars of lovable leadership, which is care. Mm-hmm. And the example I give might sound familiar to you. I live in the Northeast, and in around 2008, 2009, there was a really big snowstorm called Snowmageddon. Yep. And I worked for a management consulting firm that was about a 20 to 40 minute drive away from my home. At that time, I was driving the Honda Insight. The Honda Insight was just about the only car less powerful and smaller and less well-equipped for winter than a Mini. So both of us are in that same, it was a hybrid. It was real rear wheel drive. It looked like a moon boot. It was not equipped for this. And in the midst of Snowmageddon, I call in assuming, now I was different. Like I wasn't worried about it. I was assuming they were just going to be like, well, stay home.
Right.
They did not. They said, you're expected to be in the office. Mm-hmm. So I drive this tiny little car across icy, snowy, awful, everything, fearing for my life. Trying to get myself into this office. I get in there and same as you, what did we do? We looked at our email. We talked about the storm and we eventually got to leave early. Well, actually in my case, the C-suite didn't show up either. So in my head, I see you're not living the example that you don't care about our safety, making us come in when we very easily at that time could have worked remotely on the things we did. We all had laptops. The underpinning of my story that really reemphasizes this is that a critical moment in my life, very traumatic, is that my mother was in a car accident on my last day of high school. So road safety and how that can impact your life on a moment's notice, very, very, very deeply felt in my soul. So we have very, very similar backgrounds there. And it's interesting how both of us chose to go into culture and leadership and, you know, the design of how it is that we work as people based upon traumatic examples of people not paying attention to our needs and our safety and not giving us the respect of treating us like adults who are able to make their own decisions. And there's so much there. So let's talk about, because you brought up a couple threads I want to pull on. The first is about policy. So if we're going to address this idea of letting people have flexibility or letting people have autonomy, and I want to make sure we distinguish between those two things. But when we're talking about giving people flexibility or autonomy, there's kind of two ways you could think about it, right? Like, do we go laissez-faire and just kind of let people do what they do? Or do we institute policies? And even if you go laissez-faire, isn't that just the policy? So how do we get through this way of creating more respectful and more, I don't know, giving people the freedom to be who they are? How do we get to that better place without policy, or do we need policy? How is all this going to work? So take us down that, and maybe if you could just start, I know there's a difference between flexibility and autonomy, and I hope you could clarify that for us to start.
Yep. So flexibility is a program, and that program is around, like I mentioned earlier, 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and anything different than that, I have to ask permission or follow a policy. What autonomy is, it's not even on the same planet. Autonomy is every minute of my life, I am making decisions about what I need to do, when I need to do it, in all areas of my life, work included. If you feel like, wow, why can't we be treated like adults? It's because we have a management mindset that is out of date. It's, I manage you, not I manage the work. I manage you. I tell you where to go, when, how long, all of that. And to get over that, we have to innovate in that space between the manager and people that do work. It has to stop being permission granting and move towards performance guiding. So in that situation where I'm autonomous, I'm not telling people where I am. I'm not asking permission about where I'm going to work from that day. If I need help, I reach out to my results coach, not a manager, not managing me, helping me with my work. And when every single person in the system, not just a few that, you know, get the best perks, when every single person in the system is focused on being accountable for the work, understanding clearly what it is, and having the autonomy to move about that in a way that's makes sense for my job, the people I collaborate with, my family, everything. So one of the things I just want to throw out there is what's happening right now with performance-based hybrid is that's the macro trend, okay? Everybody felt like they lost control, right, of us because all of a sudden we're all in our houses. Well, that's still a location-based, that's where you are, right? And you have to do that from 8 to 5 and you have to do it Monday through Friday. And if you're going to go to the dentist, you have to ask permission. Nothing had changed. Now, here we are post-pandemic. Now what are we going to do? Well, now we want people back in the office. Oh, they don't want to come back in the office. They got a little bit of control and now they don't want to lose it. So now they think, okay, well, how about, you know, 2 days in the office, 3 days at home. Oh, good. Now I feel like I have more control. You have no control. You have zero control. You're still told, even if it's on a Tuesday and going into the office is going to completely waste your time and you don't need to be there. You have to do it because, you know, people collaborate better when they're in the office. Okay, that's a hunk of bullshit. We are in 2024. We know how to collaborate. Give me the goal. Give me the show me a picture of where we're trying to go. What is the purpose of what we're doing? And how do we measure it? And then let me do my job. And if I need help, I'll talk to you. That's the world today.
I want to call out something that you said that was such a brilliant quote. And I want to call it out for the listeners, but you said, manage the work, not the person, mm-hmm. right? And I think so many managers think it is their job to control the movements of the people, how they do their work, when they do their work, the whole thing. Whereas really you're looking at outcomes. And I've been operating in a, like, let's just mm-hmm. work on outcomes. I don't care right. when you work, how you work sort of thing for years now. So I'm glad to be aligned with that. There's a couple things that that are poking and prodding at me around this idea, because I'm a believer, right? I work for myself. This is how I structure my company. This is how I work with people. This is how I, you know, talk to my clients about how I'm going to work with them. So I'm a believer. I think where ultimately I hear a little voice in my head is the rational actor of a capitalist world that we live in that asks me some questions. One, why should we do this? Is this going to help us be more profitable? Is this better than the model we have where I'm able to control where people are and what they do? And if they don't fall in line, then I can fire them and bring someone else in and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of like data out there that costs more to hire people than to keep them. And so all that's there, right?
Right.
There's still that voice despite all of the data. So I guess one, the question is, can this exist in a capitalist system to begin with? And how do you make the case that it's better than what we currently have? And the related point is the first criticism that I would hear coming up from this manager in my head who's in black and white would say, well, how do we handle meetings? You're just going to be so autonomous. We have meetings. We have lots of Zoom meetings. Where are you? Where are you? How are you going to be on them? Are you just going to take them from the beach? Like, so how do you address some of these things? Like, again, I'm a believer, but we got it. I'm going to play skeptic here. Convince me that we can have a better life for everyone and comparable or better results.
You know, you talked about a capitalist society, and what I'm thinking about today and writing about in my next book is the autonomy economy. So how do we grow business in a whole different kind of lens than we're used to? What I've learned from a lot of leaders is that they do just what you're saying. Well, what do you mean? Are you going to, you know, be in your underwear when you come on the call? And what are our customers going to think if you're not wearing a blouse? And I've heard everything. What's underneath all that is I've lost control of you. So what I'm worried about is you're not going to be working. You're going to be doing your laundry. Oh my gosh, what if you go to the ice cream store? What about Bob in accounting? Leaders like dive all the way down into the weeds instead of getting on the balcony and looking at the landscape and thinking about, are we all crystal clear about what we're driving towards? And that's where the problem is. When you take accountability and give people freedom to do their best work, and then match that with 100% accountability, you've got an absolutely winning formula. Business results go up. Engagement goes up. You keep the best people. People want to work for you. On and on and on. There was a 6-year longitudinal study funded by the NIH about the results-only work environment. And they found that when you give people control over their time, and of course, on the other flip side of that, what are you accountable for? They did saliva swabs to look at cortisone levels. And they found that workers' cortisol levels dropped, but even better, their family members' cortisol levels dropped. And that is significant when you're thinking about people being burned out and overworked and talking about how many hours they work and they never get to go to their child's play. All that stress is something that Robert Karasek in 1979 actually studied, which was the demands we have on our life and how much control we have to meet those demands. And the workplace doesn't give us that control. I mean, think about if you were going to do your laundry and somebody said, now you have to start at 8, and then while it's going, you have to sit and watch it so nothing happens. Because who knows, the door could fly open. And now you stay there. Don't go do anything else. Even though, you know, you could go get some stuff at Target and do all this other stuff. You need to sit there at the washing machine. And you need to be done by 11. And then I'll let you have a break. You would go, are you kidding me right now? I'm an adult. I know what the outcome is of doing laundry. Right? So if you're clear with me, and I think this is something, Jeff, you probably run into as well. When I do workshops and I say, how many of you are crystal clear about the results you need to achieve, measurable? I get about a quarter of the people out of 35 people raising their hand. What everybody else believes they're accountable for is time. I did my time. And there's one other place in society where people do time, and that is prison. Prison.
Yep.
So we say, well, golly, you got your work done early. It looks like you only worked 30 hours this week. Do you need more work? Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to act like I'm so busy all the time that you can't give me any more work to do. So we have to remove ourselves from all of that crap. And for leadership to look at, is everybody pulling together? And how do I know that? And how do I talk to my managers and other leaders about that? And how are my leaders tooled up for contemporary society? They're still managing like it's 1952.
I think that part of the whole like 1952 manager's mindset, where that shows up is something that you kind of alluded to, is about the manager who has lost control. And their fear around that is that if they lose control and everything goes according to plan and the outcomes come, then maybe they're not really necessary. Because if they're not controlling and their job isn't to make everyone do what they're supposed to do and crack the whip and whatever, then maybe they're not useful. I guess the irony of that is that if they kind of relinquish control, they have lower cortisol, they get less stress, probably more stuff gets done, better relationships, all that. But I guess where circling back to the beginning when we talked about policy and the coffee badging, my gut tells me that if we were to widely adopt this outcome-based way of doing things with 100% accountability, what we would likely see, even from those managers who are able to take their hands off the wheel a little bit, relinquish control, is that in the same way that you have the, I did my time and you get it done ahead of schedule, we add more to your plate. When you have people that consistently produce the results that they're accountable for, then they keep getting asked to do more. And then when they don't meet those obligations, then they get in trouble for that. So maybe they need to then reimpose more control because you're not getting everything done you were supposed to. So I wonder how do we move into this? Because I think the case you made is pretty straightforward if you can connect the dots in your mind that happier people that have autonomy, that can decide how to do their work, that can be based on outcomes, that all works, right? Happier people, how it helps their families, all that all makes perfect sense. How do we stop that creepy hand of the market always trying to inch productivity up and output out? You talked about, are people coming together? Are people being accountable to things they're held accountable for? When the benefit of someone's work flows ever upward, the gains in productivity continue to flow upward and towards shareholders. How do you even get people to be excited about that? And then if you can, how do you stop it from running out of control where we're just now exploiting people on their own schedule?
So right now, work hierarchy is vertical. And when you have autonomy and accountability, it goes horizontal. So every single person has a stake in it. What's interesting for people and the way they get engaged, if they have the discussion about what is the purpose of this organization? How do I fit into that? What do I need to do to help move this along? It's not the, you know, just sit in my cube and do time and go to some meetings and maybe my manager at my next one-on-one will tell me I'm doing a good job. We're doing a lot of activities that aren't linked straight to the outcome of the organization. One of the things I have people do is say, I'm an administrative assistant. What I do is blah, blah, blah. And because I do that, this happens and this happens and this happens and this happened. And that's why our customer's happy. I'm a janitorial staff. Here's what I do. Here's why it's important. I do this, then this happens, this happens, this happens, right? So right now we think of work as a place we go, not something we do. And when leadership can focus there, then what happens is people start pushing back if other things are coming in from left field that they didn't know they were going to be doing. I might say, okay, we've already talked about this. This is the direction we're going. And now all of a sudden leadership is having us go over here. Should I keep doing this work that I was told that was the right work? Or do I have to do that and add this on? And if that's the case, let's have a conversation about that. Because we want to be successful in both areas. And how are we going to do that with the team we have? Maybe we need more people. I don't know. But people feel more, Jeff, they feel more, they feel taller. That's what one leader told me. He said, I think all my people are taller now. And taller for him meant they're involved. They care. They ask more questions. They ask good questions. They ask questions I hadn't even thought of. Because now I'm the type of leader that's actually genuinely needing their input because they're the ones that are going to drive us forward. So those conversations aren't happening. The conversations that are happening are, well, you know, the policy says you have to be here on Thursday. So, and then you were going to be here on Friday. You can't be doing that very often because then you're out of policy. And then I have a lot of trouble with everybody else. So try to be Tuesday, Thursday. That's the conversations we're having.
Yep. It's also in the context of creating an inclusive work environment that also genuinely disadvantages people who have different needs. So as someone who's neurodivergent, I know that there's a lot of things that are difficult for me that come easier to others and then vice versa. So we're also delving into and touching on like, how do we create an environment that's actually not just broadly acceptable and better for people, but also adheres to people's individual and specific needs. So I really appreciate the model for this. I can see how if we were to do this more widely, if we were to make this more of a way, it would be beneficial. And something that you didn't directly say, but I think we're on the same page about is that it has to be genuine. It can't be a script. Mm-hmm. It can't be a policy. It can't be like a, you know, we do it this way until things get tough. It has to be a way that we now do things that is a shift rather than something that we test out and then, you know, lay someone off who's in charge of that initiative as soon as it doesn't go well for a month. Right. So it really does have to be a shift. And then I think there's also got to be, I think one of the things that would make it stickier and help it in the long run, I don't know if you'll agree with this, but I think giving the horizontal team more of a stake in the results is one piece, and having a society that has more of a safety net for when people aren't accountable or don't have a good fit, that they're not harmed by moving into an organization where they can be held accountable to results they can achieve. So creating that sort of equitable opportunity for people, I think would help to make this the sort of thing where there's less harm to the company, there's less harm to the person, and then everybody can kind of let go a little bit and really push forward towards those results. If they're getting a little bit more of the benefit, if they're not going to be harmed, if it doesn't work out and they can go find something that's a better fit, that's autonomy at like the society level, not just at the job level. And I think that that would probably go a long way as well.
Absolutely. I liked what you talked about in terms of equity. And the policies that we put in place in organizations are trying to make things equal and fair. And when they're equal and fair, they're often not equitable because we're giving people the same resources, no matter what their job is, the same time off, no matter what their job is, everything is equal and every single person is individual. So it doesn't create that sense of equity that we're all in this together and we all have the same opportunity. We're opportunistic and we're able to do that together. When you start managing people's time, That's just like throwing sand in the gears. All of a sudden now, my engagement has just dropped because I'm doing great work. My team's doing great work. And you're worried about what day of the week we're in. That's a really, really sharp shift in mindset. What's really holding it back, Jeff, and you know this, is a belief system. So we believe people that come face-to-face have better relationships. We believe that people collaborate better when they're all in the same space in an office. I could go on and on. There's all these things we believe, and so our behaviors follow it. And if I believe you're a slacker, and if I let you work at home, you're going to do laundry all day. Well, then that's my belief saying, I got to keep that guy in the office because I believe this thing. That's outdated. And we call them orthodoxies. It's these all of these deeply held beliefs that are so hard to let go of. And that's where the mindset has to shift. The work that we do tears down those barriers, those mindset barriers. And then what happens is the culture starts to overcome inertia. It starts to evolve and it's constantly shifting and moving because it's not on that policy-based, rule-based platform that doesn't allow for people to be nimble and think up new ideas and all the things that they can do. So what we're talking about, Jeff, is not easy. It is not easy. It's really hard to let go of things you've believed your whole life that made you go up the ladder. But we have a really unique time in history to do that. Right now, start thinking of work or people in a different way and evolve the entire organization so that business gets better, communities get closer, you know, people can manage their lives and they're doing better. It really is, it, like you said earlier, it permeates everywhere. So, you know, we've worked with quite a few organizations and they are seeing, you know, things that they never thought they would see in terms of unintended consequences that are positive, and they would never go back. The thought of telling you when you need to work and how long is so foreign to them. They feel like their heads are going to blow up. We need the whole, as you talked in the beginning, like, what do I want? The most beautiful thing that could happen is we get more and more and more organizations keyed into autonomy and accountability to start leading the way in a bigger way, not just, they can do that, but I can't. Our company can't do that. I've done it with construction workers. So I dream about more leaders who are status quo breakers, and something inside them is saying, we have to change. And, all this other stuff we put in place isn't working. Giving people the 4-day work week, people still aren't happy. Giving people 2 days in, 3 days out, still not happy. Why aren't these people happy? Because you're still controlling time and location, and you're not getting clear and talking about the work. Period.
I hard believe, to do. I 100% believe in how much better the world would look if we went this direction. Let me ask you this as sort of like a closing thought on this. If somebody's out there listening to this right now and they want to take the first steps towards moving their culture, advocating or making the decision to be able to put in place a culture based in autonomy and accountability, how do you suppose someone does that? Aside from saying, hey, listen to this episode, hire us and have us do these things. What is the process that people can go about doing this? And I want to offer real quick my first thought that I think is the critical key factor in all of this. I think it's a widespread fundamental adoption of different values. Mm-hmm. And I think so long as we have a value of never-ending growth and grind and hustle culture and things like that, we're never going to be able to adopt something like this. And those cultures will run through people and burn them out, but will suffocate and take the air out of those who are trying to build better work cultures.
Right.
And ultimately everyone will be worse off. So I think we have to shift to a values. And to your point, I think we're in a critical time right now where people are reevaluating what's important. The number of people I've spoken to who their themes for the year are about work-life balance or about, finding their peace or slowing down. I mean, it's everywhere.
Right.
So I think we're at a critical moment. I think you're right about that. And I think the value shifting presents that opportunity. So if I'm right there and you're in agreement with me that the values are shifting and it's a prime opportunity, how do you advocate people take the first few steps to move towards this?
Yep. There's some steps people can take. What I'm proposing is a disruptive culture shift. It's a social change. So, We're the guides, like we guide. That's one of the things we do to help organizations get started. But there's one little little tiny thing people can start doing that they're going to start seeing big change. And that's this. When you need something, reach out to that person and tell them what you need and when you need it. Exactly when. That changes everything. Because if I say, you know what, Jeff, I know you want that, spreadsheet. I'll get it to you as soon as possible. Or you say to me, get it to me ASAP, get it to me sometime next week. And there's so much waiting and confusion because you don't know and you don't trust anybody because you said you'd get it to me this week and you didn't. Now I have to go ask you again. If we just get really clear about what we need and when we need it and ask that person, reach out however with your technology and get agreement all the way through the organization and start delivering. When you get things, when you think you're going to get them because somebody said 2 o'clock on Friday, it changes your whole attitude because you know you're going to get it. You don't have to worry about it all weekend. And the whole ASAP and sometime next week and all of those sort of loose, polite, ways of working are not helping us at all.
Can I just give you like three cheers for that one? I have ADHD. Those terms do not make sense to me. I need to know how important it is and what is the actual due date. Everything else is just noise to me. And it says, this is not important enough. It fades into the background. I've forgotten about it by the time I walk away. So I'm with you 100%. Who needs to do what by when? And then leave them alone to like deliver that. And then when things don't happen, I think there's also just we have to understand there's a period of adjustment here because there's still way too much on all of our plate and too many soft due dates and not enough clarity on what's important. So when we get to a point where we have that clarity and everybody's clear about what by when and how important, it becomes a lot easier to say, hey, look, here's what's on my plate. I can't get it to you then. I can get it to you here. And you can work around it in the ways that you work. So
you start negotiating.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
It's like negotiation all the time. And it gets people to focus on what's the real work. Because if you ask me for something and I think, what does he need that for? I'll start asking you because I want you to get what you need. Maybe you don't need what you asked me for. And if we talk a little bit, I can get something else. Here's the deathly question in an organization. Where's Bob? On planet Earth? Like, where's Bob? People want to know where people are. I talk to people every day. They have no idea where I am. Needing to know where somebody is right away, again, puts the sand in the gears. You don't need to know where he is. What do you need from Bob? What do you need? And when do you need it? Reach out. Bob gets back to me all the time. So asking where somebody is such an outdated question. Now, if I'm a brain surgeon and I'm supposed to be in there working on that brain, well, and yeah, I'm not there, then where am I, right? That's a whole different ballgame. But there's a lot of knowledge workers, a lot of office workers where that question just says, Bob isn't, you know, as dedicated as I am. Bob's a slacker. Oh, he got to come in late again today because his kid was sick. On and on and on. We have the technology to communicate with each other and be really clear. And I think, like you said, that makes a big change. I mean, for everybody, it has to become part of the culture. And it has to be how we do business around here. We never just throw something out and go ASAP, ever. We are clear. And even if you don't have like a hard deadline, give a deadline because it helps people, create the rhythm to get everything in their lives done. They can put that in there somewhere and get it done. If you don't give them a deadline, you said it, it's never going to happen.
Yep.
Because I'm going to work with all the deadlines. And that person that said ASAP, I don't know, what does that mean? 5 minutes, 10 years? I don't know.
Yeah. And then also you deal with the whole like highest paid person's opinion sort of situation where it's like ASAP means different things based upon who's saying ASAP. So yeah, I just really appreciate that this brings everything into a space of clarity. And it treats everyone with the respect to make their own decisions about how to run things. And I think all of the problems that people could foresee coming from that, I think pale in comparison to the problems that we're currently facing. And the brunt of those are faced by the people who are often the ones getting in trouble, right? Or like who are being controlled. So I fully am with you in advocating for a change in how we work and focusing more on outcomes and giving people the freedom, flexibility, and autonomy to do it the way they want. Mm-hmm. And I've seen those studies as well that autonomy is that number one factor in people's job satisfaction. So it kind of just, it paints the picture for itself. Jody, you've been
if you say to somebody, are you pregnant? You either are or you're not.
Yeah.
Right? If you're autonomous, you either are or you're not. And if somebody says 2 days in the office, not autonomy. Autonomy is self-directed and independent, period. End of story. It's not you telling me when. Now, if I'm having trouble with my work, let's have a conversation about that. But it's not, well, your results are suffering. I need you in the office 5 days a week now so I can watch you. No, we're adults.
Yeah.
Yep.
You've been a fabulous guest. Thank you so much for coming on to Shareable and talking all about culture with me and how to build a better world and all that. Where can people go and find more information about you, where they can connect with you, where they can hire you, where they can, you have a book that is out or coming out, right?
Well, I have two books out. One is Why Work Sucks and How to Fix It. That came out in 2008. Why Managing Sucks and How to Fix It came out in 2013. You can see those on our web. Amazon has them, but our website, gorowe.com, GOROWE.com, talks about the results-only work environment. We have some great downloads there for people, free downloads. And they can find me there too, the books, and what we're about and what we're trying to do.
Amazing. Well, I encourage everyone to go and check all of that out. Pick up your books. You were awesome. I'm totally going to have you back on. I told you about some of the things I'm going to be doing with Shareable, and you are awesome. And I'm so, it was crazy when you were telling your story. I was sitting at the beginning when you're talking about your mini, I was sitting here going like, wow, I cannot wait to tell her about my insights.
Right.
So thank you for coming on. This episode was awesome. You were a great guest. I would tell people to tell others about the episode, which would make this episode shareable.
So tell me, what was most valuable or useful for you in this episode? Send me a message or hit me up on social media. I'm easy to find, but there's links in the show notes just to make it easy. Seriously, I'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed this episode, there's a couple things you could do, starting with subscribing to the show. And after that, head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate the show 5 stars and leave a review. Consider sharing this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. Or just buy me a latte or an old fashioned by hitting up that tip jar. If you're looking for a good book to read, may I suggest The Lovable Leader, which covers how to build great teams with trust, respect, and kindness. It's built exclusively for brand new managers, and it's a handbook that will serve you well in your journey of leadership. Just search for Lovable Leader wherever books are sold online. And finally, if you're interested in working with me or checking out any of my other projects, go to jgibbard.com. That link, as well as every other link mentioned, will be found in the show notes. Stay safe, be kind, and seriously, share this episode with someone. I'll see you on the next episode of Shareable. Thanks for listening. This podcast is part of the Shareable Podcast Network. Learn more at shareable.fm.